Windows Phone is officially dead. An iPhone app that lets blind people see and a neural network that will create a fake face and put words into its mouth. All that and the EFF is here to tell us why we need to care about net neutrality coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1808, recorded Wednesday, July 12th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT, and you'll save 20% off any order.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you everything you need to know about technology. Sometimes you tell us things we need to know, and we appreciate that. Yeah. I am Megan Maroney.
I am Jason Howell, and I made it through yesterday without buying a single thing from Amazon. Although I really wanted to, but I didn't.
I caved.
You caved? What did you get?
I got two child-sized wetsuit tops.
Oh, okay.
For my boys.
Was that on sale?
Yes. Uh-huh. And I got an Amazon Dot.
What?
I got an Echo Dot. I got another Echo Dot. I could not help myself because
I could not avoid getting the dot.
Well, I could not. Oh. I could not. There should actually be a Dr. Seuss book about my addiction to shopping. Or if you ordered it through the Echo Dot, you got $10 off, just a $10 coupon.
Oh.
So it was basically $25 for this item that I use every single day and evening.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I mean, I don't know. I'll give it to somebody. I'll get someone.
Or is there a room that's dotless at this point in your house?
The garage. Yes.
There you go.
The garage.
There you go.
I'm going to totally put it there.
Piece of cake.
I bought some other things too.
But not a piece of cake.
No. And I bought some things from Target too because they were matching. Something.
Yes, that's right. There was some matching going on. So Amazon, as you already know, concluded Prime Day yesterday. Pretty certain the results will inspire Amazon to return with it for a fourth time next summer. Sales for Prime Day were 60% higher than last year's event and were also more than Amazon's own Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales last year. So their fake holiday is beating all of their other records. Not only was it good for sales, it was good for netting new Prime members as Amazon brought in, quote, record numbers of new subs. The Echo Dot, as Megan knows, was the single most popular product sold during the sale, normally $49.99, but on sale for $34.99. And then you're talking about this extra $10 coupon. Man, it's nutso.
It is. So I read that the most popular thing, maybe the most popular thing that wasn't from Amazon, was a pressure cooker.
Oh, I think I saw that. Yeah, making the rounds.
Yeah.
There was a pressure cooker that everybody just had to get.
Well, because every time I went to Amazon, it was like the pressure cooker showed up. But I just think like...
Why are they applying so much pressure for this pressure cooker?
I know. I feel like it is, a metaphor for our time. That's right. Why everyone bought it. I don't know that anyone is making a bunch of rice and beans all the time. I want anyone who brought... If you bought a pressure cooker, please email me at megan@twit.tv and let me know if you actually needed the pressure cooker, what you're going to do with it, etc.
Cook under pressure, obviously.
I also bought some items as Christmas gifts, which I think is either insane or very prepared.
So your holiday shopping season has already begun?
In July. I mean, depressing. That's the idea, right? I mean, I think that is the ultimate idea behind Prime Day. Start your holiday shopping in July.
The ultimate idea, it touches on that. July is the second slowest month of the year for retail. And so basically what Amazon has done is they have created a shopping frenzy during a month when they would normally be incredibly dead, at least when you compare it to other retail outlets. Walmart and Jet.com were matching many of Amazon's sales throughout the day. MarketTrack saw that Walmart stocked 82% of the 52 Prime Day items that they were tracking. So there was a lot of similarities there. You went to Target, they were matching. So, you know, in some sense, in some ways, I wonder if it lifted everyone up. But I mean, there was so much traffic going to Amazon, you know, that maybe it didn't. But at the same time, you had to buy an Amazon Prime membership to do that. And mm-hmm. that was another big reason why Amazon wanted to do this. They've driven up their subscription, and that's going to encourage even more sales throughout the year.
I mean, I think it did lift everyone up. I also think that, I mean, Walmart and Jet had, or Walmart especially, that owns Jet, had a lot of, they were able to match a lot of the deals, mm-hmm. but no one else was. Like, Target wasn't, I mean, I think Walmart was able to match like 50 or 60% of the deals or something, whereas, you know, Target and no one else was able to match their deals. So it might have lifted everyone up. But it also might have shown no one can compete. Amazon has got this. Like I've said several times on the show, it won't be long till all of us are buying everything from Amazon.
Well, I mean, as far as competitors for Amazon, Walmart is probably the biggest competitor, right? They're competing in retail and online. Now Amazon's moving more into the brick and mortar area, and Walmart obviously is very, very strong there. So yeah, they're battling it out. It's the battle royale for this sort of shopping.
Mm-hmm. This week, Microsoft's Inspire event is happening in Washington, D.C. The company announced there a new free iPhone app for people with visual impairments. It's called Seeing AI, and its mission is to narrate the world around you using artificial intelligence. People who are blind or who have low vision can use the app to hear descriptions of nearby people, text, and objects. We first saw the prototype of this at Microsoft Build last year. Now you can download the real thing. The app will tell you the age and even the expression the person has. I'm guessing they got all this from the training we did on all those free Microsoft Garage apps that we played with so often.
Uh-huh.
It's very similar. So I tried it with Jason. There it is.
That's me looking normal. No, sorry. That's me looking neutral. That's my neutral phase.
So it said he was a 44-year-old man.
Wrong.
Wrong.
I mean,
you're
wrong,
much,
right.
Much younger than 44. Once it said you were 51 when we took another picture, but I won't mention that. Oh, I just mentioned it.
Oh, you just did.
It said this was your neutral look. So I was playing around. I think there are a few, either it's a user error or there's a few bugs, because I couldn't get it to narrate the objects around me. I mean, you can point it at barcodes and it'll tell you mm-hmm. what things are, but you know, it didn't read out loud those things to me. So if I was blind, I wouldn't know.
You wouldn't get the benefit of kind of what it's supposed to mm-hmm. do.
But
to tell you what you're looking at.
I did email a couple of our viewers who I know have visual impairments and ask them what they thought of it. They haven't gotten back to me yet, but I think, I mean, this is great if it works. And mm-hmm. I have no complaints. I'm glad that Microsoft is putting their AI technology into the things like this.
Yeah, when it's working, it's literally like a window into the world that surrounds you. If you can't see it with your own facilities. So that's awesome. Facebook is also doing this. We've talked in the past about Facebook kind of working to improve object recognition and descriptions so that, you know, those with visual impairments or vision impairments can actually get some sort of a description of the pictures that are appearing on the network. So this is all really important stuff and opens the capabilities, opens the playing field for people who want to enjoy these devices and enjoy these services the way everyone else can, basically.
Right, because remember we talked about those goggles or whatever that would sort of help you see. I think it wasn't narrating. It was, you know, actually helping you see, mm-hmm. and they were like $10,000 or something, and it, you know, way out of so many people's price range. And this is free. I mean, mm-hmm. it's totally free. You can use it. I mean, on iOS, you have VoiceOver, which will narrate right. what's going on. But if you, like, you took three pictures of yourself with the app and then you labeled it as Jason. So now if, like, someone sent me a picture that had you in it, conceivably, like, I could use the app and you can use the share sheet within your mail and it would say, like, there's Jason. That's a picture of Jason.
That's Jason looking neutral
mm-hmm.
at you.
And I mean, iOS is also coming up with similar things. I mean, that at WWDC, there was, you know, one of their inspirational movies that they had that was going to do something that was using AI to do something similar as well.
Well, yeah, and Google at Google I/O had God, I'm suddenly blanking on the name of the technology that they're going to be rolling out. Google Lens. Which is going to also have kind of their artificial intelligence actively recognizing objects and stuff. I don't know if it'll have facial recognition down to the person to describe it to you in an audible sense, but they're all kind of working in this direction, and AI is really driving all of this, as is driving so many things right now. It's a crazy world. Windows Phone 8.1 was important for a number of reasons, but notably, it happened to be the first update to introduce Cortana, Microsoft's digital assistant technology, among other things. That was more than 3 years ago, and though millions of devices still run the OS, Microsoft has officially ended support for the update. Thank you, Brian. That's appropriate. In essence, this marks the end of the Windows Phone timeline. Microsoft is still supporting Windows 10 Mobile, however. Most recently with the rollout of the Windows 10 Mobile Creators Update, though some people feel like that was very light on actual features and actual improvements. There's no word on if the fall Creators Update is going to include any updates for Windows 10 Mobile. It just seems like it's all shifting down.
I feel like Windows Phone died the day Mary Jo Foley switched to Android. That was when I felt it. I felt it's been dead for... since then. But, you know, it's seriously, it makes sense. Like, they've been creating some great apps for iOS, like the one we just talked about. Outlook for iOS and Android is a great email app. So if this is where they're focusing their energy is, I say that's fine. I never liked Windows Phone, but I also think that competition leads to innovation. And, just having two mobile operating systems is going to reduce the amount of innovation, probably.
For sure. And I mean, you know, it's had a lot of user support. It just did the whole hardware device approach for Microsoft didn't work out so well. And of course, they ended up getting rid of Nokia. Some believe that Microsoft will continue light maintenance of Windows 10 Mobile and then eventually kill it off sometime in 2018. But I don't know. I guess that remains to be seen. I don't know. Maybe is this the last time we play taps for Windows and its mobile efforts? I don't know.
Well, it's mobile efforts or it's phone efforts?
It's phone efforts, yeah. Because, you know, the Surface phone, that there's also been rumors about a Surface phone, which have not materialized in anything, so...
Well,
maybe that happens.
The weirdest thing to me about this is 2 years ago when they were really pushing the, you know, you're going to be able to use Windows 10 across all your devices. And then, you know, it's just like they only have mobile and, you know, and the PC.
Mm-hmm. Burke, for the record, the report coming from Burke says that he's only seen a Windows phone in the wild once.
What about Alex? He's not in the wild? Okay.
No, Alex is definitely not in the wild.
Saw a Windows phone in the wild once as well. And it was actually hiking in Montana. And I saw someone, they asked me to take their photo and they handed me their Windows phone. And I was like, I've never seen a Windows phone. And their response was like, do you want it?
Wah, wah, wah.
So we have talked about Joshua Browder before. He is the young superhero who developed the robot lawyer that first started getting people out of paying parking tickets in 2015. He has since expanded his services to helping refugees. Browder, now only a junior at Stanford, has expanded his services even more. Do Not Pay is what it's called. Will now help in 1,000 different legal areas, ranging from maybe you have an argument with your landlord or you're having a harassment issue in the workplace. The legal advice is free. It's instant. Browder says the machine is right about 55% of the time, which is pretty good for a free robot, I would say.
Yeah, sure. It either tells you the thing, you know, it gives you the right right advice for where to go for that next step, or it doesn't. And like I went on there and plugged in a handful of things, and very often it came back like, do you want general help? And I was like, okay, so that's like a big X. But there's no doubt that this has helped a lot of people. You know, just Do Not Pay saved $9.3 million and 375,000 parking tickets that were disputed as a result of that. So I mean, if it can do that, you know, just think of all the other directions that it can go. I guess right now he's currently insisting that this remains free, resisting VC funding for now, I'm guessing until he finishes school maybe. But also he kind of wants to build up user engagement, get more people using it, and then potentially monetize down the line, possibly allow businesses to sponsor specific bots or something along those lines.
Yeah, it can't help you with everything. It says, Browder said, it cannot help you if you want to get a divorce. You cannot do that with a bot yet. It reminds me, though, he said a lot of it is just lawyerly letters. The lawyerly letter is sometimes the most effective against a lot of legal issues that you have. I mean, it reminds me of Kate Wagner, who was here with the Mansion site, the McMansion Hell website.
Mm-hmm.
And really just one very firmly worded letter from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who we're about to talk to, was enough to have Zillow back off. So really that's all you need to do.
Now that we're talking about it, I'm kind of surprised that Google doesn't do this already with their search. That you go, I know. Well, hey, no, Google. Hey, maybe you hire him. I don't know. But,
yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Like, a patent. Maybe that's why he's not charging, because there's already people who have patents for this. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's one of the things that AI is really good at is legal stuff. Like all that kind of, you know, digging through precedents and just like all of the clerk stuff in the legal business. AI mm-hmm. and is really good at that. After the break, Elliot Harmon from the Electronic Frontier Foundation is here to tell us why we should speak up today about net neutrality. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. So a friend of mine recently posted on Facebook that she had been unable to find her keys for a full 24 hours. She turned the house upside down, and then she finally realized that her dogs had hidden them under the couch cushions. Her dogs had hidden her keys under the couch cushions. Like, I've never heard of a keychain hiding dog, but if she was making that up in order to cover for the fact that she'd been laying on the couch and lost her keys and couldn't find them, I told her the same thing. I will tell you right now, Tracker can help with these kinds of very common problems. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. Now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You won't even notice it's there until you need to use it. Place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, your keys, your wallet, even your cat or that dog that may or may not be hiding your keys. It is small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you misplace something that has a Tracker Pixel attached, you can use your smartphone, and a 90-decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so you can find your items in the dark. That's right. It has a light attached to it. You can find your items in the dark. You can use it even if you never lose stuff. It's a really great light. If you lose your phone, just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone rings, even if it's on silent. You can even locate your items if it's miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. So, Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. Go to thetracker.com, enter promo code TNT. Don't forget the TNT. I always forget to enter promo codes because I get so excited about buying things. But I know you won't forget. You might lose things, but you won't forget to add TNT. And then you get to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off. If you are watching our show live, then you know that we're streaming in black and white today. And that is not just because it makes us look like we're starring in a film noir production of the Tech News. It is also because today is the Net Neutrality Day of Action. And joining us to talk about what's at stake is Elliot Harmon, activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Welcome back to the show, Elliot.
Hi, guys. It's great to see you again.
So first, for those who've been ignoring this topic for whatever reason for the past 3 or 4 years and who need a refresher, can you give us just a little short description of what exactly is net neutrality?
Sure. I think that to understand why net neutrality is important, you should really look at why the internet is important. What makes the internet really special is that your ability to reach a wide audience is not coupled necessarily with the resources that you have available. And that is only possible because ISPs treat all of the traffic that goes over their pipes the same. And there are these bright line rules that were established in 2015 that ISPs can't block discriminately. They can't throttle websites that they don't like direct you to websites that they prefer, and they can't do paid prioritization. They can't accept money from content providers to give those content providers preferential treatment. And now there are ISPs trying to get those rules rolled back. And to do so would be a major, it would be giving up a lot of what makes the internet special.
And so, I mean, I got into a little Twitter discussion today about this because someone was like, why is open internet political? And, you know, it shouldn't be. My argument is it shouldn't be, but neither should my uterus be political. And we all know that it is. So tell us a little bit about why it's become so political, net neutrality.
It's become political because there are extremely moneyed interests involved. These large ISPs that, you know, increasingly when you're talking about large ISPs and when you're talking about large content companies, you're increasingly talking about the same companies or about corporations that have close partnerships with each other. And they are able to put a lot of lobbying dollars into steering this discussion in their direction.
So speaking of ISPs, yesterday, one of the news items surrounding this in the lead up to today is that AT&T was coming out in support of the day of action. How do you explain, or how is AT&T explaining that? Or maybe you can explain how they can be supportive of it, yet at the same time, you know, the major ISPs have been doing so much in a number of ways to kind of go counter to the point of today.
It is such a smokescreen. It's weird. It's weird that they think that they can get away with this. Comcast has been doing something similar. I don't know about you guys, but almost every day when I log into Twitter, I get one of those Comcast ads saying, oh, no, Comcast supports net neutrality. And what their argument, as I understand it, really boils down to is actually similar to the argument that Chairman Pai has been making. That you can accomplish the same thing through ISPs simply making promises to adhere to these rules rather than actually having rules that have the force of the law behind them. And in the words of the former president, fool me once, shame on you.
So, yeah, I mean, that's what I've heard Ajit Pai speak. And, you know, that's what he says. He's like, none of this has happened. You're trying to control something that hasn't happened yet. But I mean, that is a lot of what we do all the time. It's a lot of what the EFF is trying to do. Yes, like we still have free speech and we want to continue to have free speech. And we, you know, we want to have all these things that we need to make rules in order to have. So tell us a little bit about the net neutrality day of action. What is it all about?
About a month ago, a little over a month ago, was when the FCC officially put out its notice of proposed rulemaking, NPRM, outlining how it's going to roll back the net neutrality rules. When an agency puts out a policy change like that, then the public has an opportunity to comment on it. And that's what the day of action has been about, is just getting everybody to speak out to the FCC and say, no, we cannot let go of these net neutrality protections. And the EFF website and a lot of other sites on the internet, many, many other sites on the internet, have been kind of doing this game all day of giving the world a preview of what the internet might look like without net neutrality protections. If you go to our website today, you'll see this frightening message that says that it has been blocked by a fictitious ISP. There are other websites out there that are having like the loading icon, so the site just keeps loading forever, or saying, oh no, you need to pay extra to access this website. And you know, people have been really creative about it and people have been having a lot of fun with it. But the message is very serious. The message is that we are going down this path of the internet becoming a little bit less like the internet and a little bit more like cable television, where you have one very powerful intermediary with a great deal of control over how customers use the service and what kinds of content they access on it.
Yeah, it reminds me of that image that I feel like was passed around many times in jest over the, however many years, of envisioning a future where, like, you get a video package and, you know, all of your video services, you pay $5.99 for access to your video services, and you get your entertainment package or your news package, and that gives you access to your favorite news sites and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, suddenly we're at this place where, well, that's a little bit less of a joke and more of a prescient view of the future of the internet.
This was just to kind of underline that point, yeah. Quick, this was, you know, as recently as just last year, the FCC was investigating whether zero rating practices of AT&T and other large ISPs were running afoul of net neutrality rules, i.e. giving preferential treatment to the content that they have corporate partnerships with. Like, this is not science fiction. This is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you know, this is about raising awareness, and that awareness leads hopefully to people making their voice heard, leaving comments on this to ensure that the people who are making these decisions understand that there's a lot of resistance to these changes. Is there any assurance that a wide response at this point is actually going to make a lick of difference? It almost seems like the decision's already been made to a certain degree.
I think that there's certainly some validity to that argument, and I've talked to people who are more optimistic than others. You know, we should remember that a few years ago, a lot of people sort of thought that the decision had been made, not of having no rules at all, but having a much weaker version of what we ended up with, and we made a big difference then. Like, this is the first step. I would encourage everybody to submit a comment to the FCC using our site or using one of the other sites out there. The next step would be calling and emailing your members of Congress. The next step after that is going to depend a lot on what the FCC does.
Yeah.
So what do you say to people who argue that, you know, that there's so much at stake right now in other issues aside from the internet, and people who are going to be losing their health care? What do you say to people that just argue, like, what, you're worried about not getting Netflix fast enough?
This is where, to me, the rubber really hits the road and why this issue is important. If you look even just in the past few months, since that thing that happened in November, and you look at the way in which the internet has been used as a tool for political organizing, and that it's been used as a way of amplifying marginalized voices, that it's been used for people to resist, as it were, whatever other issue you think is more important than net neutrality, people need net neutrality in order to organize around that issue.
Thank you so much, Elliot. I mean, one of the things my defining principles for me is, like, just because you can't do everything doesn't mean you should do nothing. Mm-hmm. So exactly. Where can people go? What are the steps? Where can they go through the EFF to make their voice heard?
So you can go directly to the FCC website and make a comment through there. It's a little bit confusing if you've never submitted one of these before. It can be a little daunting. So we made a special site to make it extremely easy for you to submit a comment, and that's dearfcc.org. You go there. It's kind of fun. There's some kind of fill in the blanks. You can put in, why this issue matters to you. We have some suggested text, but then you can completely edit it, and you could just delete all of our suggested text and write whatever you want if you like. What's important isn't necessarily what you say, or even if we necessarily agree on every little nuance of the issue. What's really important is just that the FCC hears from you.
Thank you so much. Elliot Harmon is an activist at the EFF. You can find him at EFF.org and also at Elliot Harmon on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's great talking to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a great night. Hopefully you get some rest tonight after all of these media hits. Up next, artificial intelligence once again proves that you can't always believe what you see. Getting pretty used to this at this point. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They are the sponsor of this episode of Tech News Today. The mortgage experience, as you may have experienced on your own, it hasn't been keeping up with the times very well. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. We're all living our lives with technology, and so why shouldn't we get our mortgages that way? That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home, or even if you happen to be refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's also powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. It's all based on your income, your assets, your credit. It's all jumbled together. Rocket Mortgage then analyzes all the home loan options that they have based on that information for which you qualify, and can find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, feedback time. Nick writes in and says, not sure if this is interesting enough for TNT, but it left me gobsmacked. KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, is reportedly releasing a KFC-branded smartphone in China. It comes preloaded with KFC apps, one of which allows you to pick music that is playing in the restaurant. It appears to just be a Huawei phone with a special edition backplate, but it's still pretty ridiculous. And yeah, it's almost like a collector's item. It's based on it's a bright red Huawei 7 Plus, has the logo of Colonel Sanders etched into it. Like you said, KFC mobile app is already installed, so you don't have to go out of your way to install that mobile app. It's already there, saving you valuable time. You also get $100,000, which is virtual credits inside the KFC app.
KFC is weirdly like a very high tech fast food company. Like, they have those weirdo placemats. They've had
They've done some stuff. Yeah.
So I personally don't eat chicken. But even if you do you want the chicken brand on the back of your phone?
It's different.
Yeah. You can also get a Pepsi phone too.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I've heard of that before.
That's a Huawei phone.
Huawei's making all the deals apparently.
So yeah, I mean, like, we might think that something like some Chinese brand would be cool on a phone. Like, even if it were like the, you know, the KFC of China. Like, it could be, you know, I mean, I could consider like going into a thrift store or something and seeing this, you know, shirt that's all in Chinese and like has a cool logo and I'm wearing it around and someone's like, you know, that's a fast food chicken restaurant, right? So,
they're making 5,000 units of this phone. So they have enough faith to know, to feel like 5,000 is not too much for this limited edition phone. That seems like a lot of something that I just didn't know that anybody wanted a Kentucky Fried Chicken phone. But apparently they do.
Mm-hmm.
It'll cost $161 when you convert from 1,099 won.
Well,
and that's on sale tomorrow.
That's a pretty good
price. So you don't have to wait very long,
Megan.
Phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder how much chicken you can get for that $10,000.
I know. That's a really good question. I think we need to know this because that's inherent value built into the phone itself. Mm-hmm. So you might be paying $161, let's say, when converted to American dollars for that phone. But do you get free food from those credits?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question.
Web 4107 is asking what the 1987 is from. That's the year that KFC came to China. So it's celebrating the 30-year anniversary. I wonder if you can buy like a bucket of phones too. Then
for everyone
then
at the table.
Yeah.
I'd be maybe a little more impressed if the phone was actually shaped like a drumstick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But no.
TNT's fan of the day is Tyler Martinez on Twitter, who sent us this picture saying, this is how I watch TNT, or at least how I listen, with a small Bluetooth speaker as I clean desks and stuff at an elementary school. Thank you so much, Tyler. And what I noted on Twitter was The chairs have not changed. The elementary school chairs, they all look exactly the same.
Good design is good design.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess that's good design. Why it's designed like that? Tyler also said that maybe someday, the kids would be just sitting at virtual desks with
VR goggles on. I'm sure there is a someday where that exists.
Yeah, and then Tyler would be on the outside wiping their goggles. It's like...
cleaning the goggles.
I hope not. Tyler. Yeah. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT, record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, email us TNT@twit.tv and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. We'll find it.
All right. It's that time again where the future freaks us the heck out. And we've seen shades of this before, but artificial intelligence research at the University of Washington has culminated in a algorithm that can take a simple audio file. So it just takes an audio file of someone talking, and it can convert that audio into hyper-realistic video of that person speaking the words. Now, it's just not just the audio. As you can see here, this was actually completely computer-created, this animated GIF of Obama speaking. If you go down, there's not the first video that you see, but the second video. They demonstrate in a video Barack Obama talking in a few different of his historical videos on the left side of the screen. The AI generated Barack Obama talking to the screen with those same words on the right side.
Us being thoughtful about other people's traditions is something that Michelle and I tried to teach our kids.
As you can see on the right side, it's done really well. And that's all computer generated. It's based, it's constructed by the algorithm, obviously, learned from millions of high definition video frames of Obama talking, kind of compared to the sound that it produces. Then it would generate the lip movements, and then it would superimpose those on a animated head and torso. And all together, you create video that just never existed before.
So they used Obama as an example because there's so much video of him talking, so much high quality video of us talking, of them talking, of him talking. There's also a lot of video of us talking. So, I was thinking like they couldn't do that with me, but we're only on episode 1808. So
there's tons of video of us talking like in this shot too, which is the same as Obama's. So we could reconstruct ourselves.
So the scientists/marketing people said they want to use this so that like if you're having an audio conference, it could suddenly turn into a video conference. You could, if you couldn't see me, like if Skype went out and our guest, we could just create like, an AI version of our guest talking, which is terrifying. Like I'm all crazy. I want more face-to-face contact, but I don't think like a fake AI generated version of someone talking is better than just listening to their voice.
I don't know. I mean, but it's like in that example, it actually kind of makes sense, right? The guest knows that we're bringing them on and we hear them, but we can't see their video. It's still a representation of them and we're still hearing their actual words. But it gets all confusing because there's also AI solutions being created that actually synthesize Obama's voice, for example, entirely from scratch, based on stuff that's been fed so that you could type in anything you want. So that coupled with the video that's being created, I mean, you could basically create someone's presence from the ground up.
Right. So we should start calling this segment Black Mirror is Real Life.
Yeah.
Because there was the episode where you take all of your social media and after you're dead, you turn it into a person. So like that's basically what we could use this.
Yeah.
Which is, and it's also real. Like I heard a story recently about a woman who was dying of cancer and she had kids and this is what she was putting together so that like her kids would have some, I mean, not this exactly, but the same sort of like collecting. I mean, there are actual services that we've talked about before that will collect all your social media, everything, and then make a facsimile of you.
Make like a you bot to converse with. Burke is pointing out that in order to do this well, this AI requires really good light sourcing for the renders. And I mean, that's definitely a big part of it, right? This is all because this is based on images and video found all over the place. One thing that they pointed out is that you could detect fakery because it's constructed by the AI, it's constructed by the algorithm, but it's still based on things that do exist. So it would be possible to find that particular mouth movement or that particular backdrop or whatever from pre-existing videos. And if you could find that, then you could say, okay, well, then this thing is not real. This is the fake. But still, that sounds super confusing.
I'm wondering,
yeah, oh, there we go. Yeah, perfect.
I am wondering if Burke is saying our lighting is not good, which is confusing because you're in charge of the lighting, Burke. Now I'm going to say mean things about Burke.
Oh, I misinterpreted you. Got it.
I absolutely love being able to speak in Jason's face. This is really what I dreamed of.
It's super convincing, too. It looks just like me, how I always talk out of the side of my face like that.
Yeah, I want to say mean things about everyone and have Jason be blamed for it.
Oh, weird.
I should say all kinds of inflammatory political things.
No, don't. Okay. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. Be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can share the thoughts on all the stories we discuss in the TNT subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. If you want to tweet at me about what I should have said when I was speaking out of Jason's face, please tell me. I met Megan Maroney.
Reverb Mike in chat nailed it. Picasso, Jason. That really did kind of look like a Picasso painting talking out of the side. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Josh yesterday, because he was actually the editor, and he came into the office and gave me an earful about it, because I thanked Kevin, who's editing the show today, I think.
And someone's name was spelled
wrong. I don't even know
anymore. Someone's name was spelled wrong, and Josh had to fix it.
Ah, so thanks for fixing that, Josh. Appreciate it. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.